The landlady says, "Are you enjoying yourself?" And the bad talking guy wouldn't say nothing, just shook his head. She looked at him and said, "Are you enjoying yourself?" He said, "Yes." So the woman said, "Well, dear," says, "Marisa, it's time to go and serve the chicken." She said, "Merci, madame." And she started in the kitchen and stumbled over this bad talking fella's foot. She said, "Pardon, monsieur, while I go into the kitchen and fuck the chicken." He looked around at his buddy, said, "Shit, if this is gonna be that kind of party, I'm gonna stick my dick in the mashed potato."
The Sock Jig Sneaker Podcast. When people call me Sock, I think I really should have put some more thought into my name. Welcome to episode 21 of the Sock Jig Sneaker Podcast. I'm your host, Sock Jig. You can follow me on Twitter and Instagram at Sock Jig. First off, thank you to everyone who bought my recent pair of Coxcomb Red Sock Jig socks. You know, those sold out really fast, and I had more pairs than I usually do, so it was really awesome to see. I tried to help out as many people as I could, and I was glad I was able to get more people than usual. But if you didn't, there will be another drop, you know, coming pretty soon. And thank you to everyone who sent in feedback about the podcast, last one. You know, it's nice to see that people have my back and, were on my side and wanted to reach out and let me know. I appreciate all you guys who let me know that. Thank you very much. I also wanted to say, you know, I probably will have more guest episodes, but also mix in these solo ones as well. You know, the guest episodes are easier in some ways than these solo ones in that, you know, I usually put a lot of work in the outline for these kind of solo ones and try to think of a theme and try to tie things together. Whereas, you know, guest is a conversation, and that's difficult in its own ways, but because, you know, my goal on those is to have a conversation with someone and not exactly interview them and ask them, you know, how they got into sneakers and stuff like that. But for this episode, I want to talk about, first off, getting validation from sneaker publications. Also, the Sneaker Guy of the Week segment returns. I also talk about some of the recent releases, Off-White Dunk and the Joe Fresh Goods pop-up event that they had. But the main topic for this episode is raffles, and why is everything a raffle now, and why are these damn raffle bots taking all the pairs? And really, who gets to tell the story of a drop when it's first come, first serve versus a raffle? But first, pickups and what's on feet today. All right, on feet has been mostly GR Prestos. It's still summer. That's one of my favorite summer shoes. I also rocked the first Travis 1 Lowe's that I had the week of the raffle just for, you know, wishing yourself good luck. Also, for the photos I took for my socks, I got the Fear of God California slides in hand, the foam slides, you know, made in Italy, foam from the finest Italian foameries. And, you know, the problem with those are I got an Italian size 45, which in every other size chart in the world is a US 12. But for some reason for Jerry, that is actually a US 13. So they fit a bit big. I'll probably just be wearing them at home anyway, so if I wear them with thick socks or something like that, it will probably be fine. I also been wearing the Aloha Super Brainwash Victim Mark Gonzalez shoe. That's an Adidas skate shoe that I really like. And I had a few weddings to go to, so mostly just been wearing dress shoes. I'm not a sneakers with suit guy. Sneakers with suits are for little kids and rich guys. For pickups lately, I picked up the Undefeated pack, both the Dunk and the Air Force One. A friend actually picked those up for me, so thank you. You know who you are. I don't have those in hand yet. They're shipped to my U.S. address. I also picked up the New Balance Protection pack, the gray ones, the ones I compared to, you know, Bruce Banner. They're a nice GR, I think, one, and I really like that model, the 2002R. But I sold that one. I just didn't see myself wearing it. I usually wear the Salehi shoe, and I have already have a GR one of the 2002 R, so I figured I'll just sell this one. Also got the ACG Air Moab. Bodega released that one early, I think probably by accident, and they were sitting all day. That's a classic colorway, so I was able to, glad I was able to get those. I think the official release date is September 3rd. They added like the pull tabs on it and a mini swoosh, and I actually don't mind the changes because that shoe has always been a pain in the ass to get on, so the pull tabs actually help. I sort of mentioned it last week, but I did get both Uni and Jordan 4s. A listener reached out to me and said they could help out, and so I'm super appreciative of that. Thank you so much. Even though I did call them, you know, crisscross, cross-color shoes. You know, them's those just jokes. I also got the raffle win for the Travis Fragment High. You know, I admit I called this shoe lazy when I first saw it. And, you know, my thought at the time was, if you're doing a triple collab with all these big names, you should be doing something completely different. But, you know, this is probably one of those classic cases in sneaker world of just judging too early. And then especially when you hit, then it's like, you know, these aren't that bad. They're pretty good. But, you know, we all judge too early until we see more photos, more on feet. Because I didn't know at the time that it was based off an OG sample, which, you know, makes more sense. And, you know, with Fragment, of course, there is, in the last ones with the threes and stuff, he did veer away from the blue color. So it makes sense that he would go back to this blue color with Travis. But of course, the biggest draw for it is that it's ultra limited. And I've always said production numbers are part of the design of the shoe. This shoe wouldn't work as well if they made the same amount as a Shadow 2.0. But, you know, they would never do that with collab shoes anyways. So just the fact that it's, you know, ultra limited makes it a better shoe. You know, that is usually a point of contention among purists and stuff like that. But that's just how it is. That's why I say the stock number is part of the design. All right, I wanted to talk about sneaker content creators and their relationship with sneaker publications like Complex, Nice Kicks, or BR Kicks. I see this sentiment online sometimes where that these publications should be recognizing talent, that they should be out here scouting this talent and rewarding them, or at least, you know, shining a spotlight on them. This includes people on YouTube or Twitter or Instagram or podcasts, you know, somebody like myself. I wrote this outline after listening to the Sneak Diss podcast. Check out that podcast if you haven't. And they were talking about the BR Kicks sneaker sketch show that recently came out called Sneak This. They had an issue with that show because they felt the name was too similar. And, you know, people who listened to the show were tagging BR Kicks and things like that. And also BR Kicks did a sketch about sneaker drafts, which is a recurring segment that they do. So, you know, they rightfully thought that there were some similarities there. I've seen that sketch, and it's more a ripoff of, you know, Chappelle's racial draft. But, you know, they're right to think what they think. And so, basically, I said all this to what I'm about to say in this outline. I already said all this to George, so this is not really a sneak diss. I am sort of talking about them, but I'm also talking about myself. And it really applies to anyone out here creating sneaker content. You know, these publications are not out here scouting talent on Twitter or YouTube. They are not sneaker talent scouts at all. You know, they're too busy trying to get likes on Instagram. That showrunner for that BR Kick sneaker show, you know, he used to work on Jimmy Fallon. So he's got, you know, the production capabilities, how to make this kind of stuff. He's probably the one who scouted YouTube comedians to, you know, create this show. But these publications, they're not trying to pluck someone out of obscurity and compensate them. But overall, you know, they're not trying to elevate anyone that's not their own. You know, Joe LaPuma is not watching your YouTube. Joe LaPuma does not give a shit about your YouTube. Even if he did see something he liked, he's not going to go out of his way to highlight and elevate that clip. He's more likely to promote his own programming or Complex content than anything else. I'm just using JLP as an example. You know, he could be a totally nice guy. I'm using him as an example of how he publicly portrays himself, not what he does behind the scenes. What he does behind the scenes, I don't know. So maybe he does do this kind of stuff, but publicly, usually just promotes his own. And he's not exactly wrong to do that. And, you know, we all do that in a certain way of promoting our own and our friends and our colleagues. But when you're at a certain stature, you know, either personally as Joe LaPuma or as the, you know, the complex themselves, people do kind of expect this from them, even if they themselves have no interest in doing it at all. But really what I wanted to say is, these sneaker publications, they're out here trying to be good at the thing that you're already good at. They want to be making better YouTube videos. They want to be making better segments for their podcasts. They want better social media posts. They want more engagement on their posts. That's basically all they want, and it's all they really care about. They're more social media accounts than actual publications these days. And what they do, they want to do it themselves with the people they already got. The CEO of Complex recently sent out a tweet. His name is Rich Antonello, and this was his tweet. The echo chamber of the same 50 cohorts saying the same 10 things and patting each other on the back that Twitter and podcasts have become is not helpful to anyone but the host slash writer. So I had quote tweeted this and said, you know, is the Complex CEO talking about Complex here? You know, I don't know what inspired him to tweet that. He could have been listening to a podcast or reading something on the timeline or reading a book and just had this random thought and he tweeted it out. That's how Twitter is. Like, it might not have been intentional or anything like that. But this is the CEO of a pop culture media empire. And if he really thought this, then he has the direct say and power to change exactly what he's complaining about here. You know, if there's this echo chamber of the same people saying the same things and only doing it to help themselves, you as a CEO can change that. You can hire more new voices. You can hire different voices. You can hire, you know, a diverse people. But is Complex actually doing this? Does he actually want to do this? I don't think so. Yeah, I'm picking on Complex, but it's basically all of them, you know. They all basically take the Vince McMahon approach here. Just keep bringing back the same guests and the same people to talk about the same stuff. You know, what's Ben Baller or Perfect Pair think about this? You know, probably the same shit they said last time. But really, they're not out here looking for new voices. They already got voices for their YouTube and their podcast, and they have a social media guy, and his job is to get likes, and those guys' jobs are to get views. So you go with the team you have and produce the likes. I know this might sound like, you know, why am I not being on Complex, but really it's the opposite. It's like, if you want validation, you can get it from your own audience. You're not going to get it from Complex or BR Kicks or Nice Kicks. Really, validation means compensation. You know, it would be great to be noticed, have your program picked up, and then get paid for it, and then not change anything. But it doesn't work like that. You know, Complex Presents the Sock Jig Sneaker Podcast would not be the same as this podcast. It'd probably be the same shit. Hey, Ben Baller, what do you think about these undefeated Air Force Ones? Hey, tell me a story about some bullshit you did that's half made up. You know, that is not what the show is about. But if you create content your audience likes, and you make a product, say a sock, with your name on it, your audience will support you. If people like you, people will support you. You know, if you have 10,000 followers and 1% buy a t-shirt, that's 100 shirts. Don't quote me on that. This is not a math podcast. You know, I'm not saying go out there and make 100 shirts, but I'm saying if you want that validation, you can create it yourself from the people that already do support you. If you focus your energy on stuff like that and packaging and shipping a product to your supportive audience, you'll get more validation than you will trying to get Joe LaPuma to retweet you. And again, this is not a sneak diss to, you know, ironically, the Sneak Diss podcast. I told them the same thing. I told them, hey, produce some hats, sell some hats, people will buy the hats. You know, your audience will support you. You know, my audience has supported me, and I appreciate that so much. You know, when people get the socks and share their socks and tweet it, it's awesome to see. It's great. That's literally validation. I always said I started my Twitter and podcast because I felt there was a void that what I thought wasn't out there in the sneaker world. So I was going to put it out there. You know, I'm an older guy in this game, but like I've said before, I'm not jaded, and I have fun in this. I have fun in the game, despite all the bullshit that's been happening for many years now. You know, and usually people my age are the opposite. They are jaded and they do gatekeep. So that's why I felt it was important to put my voice out there. So if you're out there and you're making content and your content is good, it's good because it's not complex. It's good because it's your voice. It's not their voice. And people who like you will support you because Joel LaPuma is not walking through that door. The sneaker guy of the week is the guy who likes to publicly proclaim the sneakers aren't fun anymore. You know, there's too much fuckery in this game right now. These fucking botters and their bots botting and checking out. Not to mention sneakers and this bullshit exclusive access and draws. StockX is trending every day and some failed legit check. All of which are good points. It has been fucked up lately. However, the next day, the official photos of the Lightning 4s come out, and everything's back to normal. Man, I can't wait to get these. I've been waiting forever for those. That stuff you tweeted yesterday about, you know, quitting the game, totally forgotten. These official photos have come out and have totally redeemed themselves. And not only just the people who publicly proclaim it, even if you just thought about deleting the sneakers app, you're a hero for having thought it. There's other people who haven't thought it. You have thought about it. Doesn't matter if you actually did delete it. You should be applauded for having thought about it. It doesn't matter if you did. That's exactly what the segment is about, to applaud those heroes. That's why guy who likes to proclaim that sneakers aren't fun anymore, you are the sneaker guy of the week. I wanted to talk about a few releases and, you know, some that are still going on. The first one is this Off-White Dunk through Sneakers Early Access. You know, I don't really think these shoes are that great. They all look like a decaying tooth to me. You know, the idea I think is overkill. 50 is just way too much. But it is innovative how he's doing it, as, you know, you get a random shoe, you don't know which one you're getting it. So the rollout is a bit different, so I don't completely hate it, but really, if it's a shoe that I can't get, it's totally out of my mind. And I can't get it because I don't have access to sneakers. The great Nike filter has done a pretty good job filtering out Canada, so, you know, that just means I don't really care at all. So, you know, I'm not a big fan of how they're kind of dropping this exclusive access a day at a time and kind of keeping you hanging on. But that seems to be the whole point of the release, is just to keep you hanging on. You know, they don't want you to drop that thread of Off-White and Virgil being the shit. So in terms of like having fun for this shoe, the fun for me is making jokes about it every day when people rage about it. So, you know, catch me on Twitter making whatever joke that comes to my mind that, you know, 9 a.m. PST when everyone is, you know, fake happy for their friends that get exclusive access. And very similar to this has been Yeezy Day. For me in Canada, that it was like basically no access to that Yeezy Day. It was in the US only. You need a VPN to even access Yeezy Supply. And those are easy to get, but it's not even worth trying for me since all the reshipper zip codes are banned anyways. And really, Yeezy Day is just a botting holiday. And that's just Adidas taking, you know, inventory of what's in the warehouse and kind of giving them directly to the botters. I saw a post asking why doesn't Adidas actually advertise this to regular people, and really they do. They send out emails to their mailing list, which is about the extent of what most hype sneaker release marketing really is. It's only once in a while will you see these commercials and things like that made. Again, I had no access at all, so I just had fun making jokes on Twitter and not caring about the release at all. Finally, I want to talk about the Joe Fresh Goods release. You know, what's cool about him is he's real online, on Twitter and on Instagram. And you saw recently where he was kind of battling out with the same sneaker publications that I was talking about. Because he said, oh, they all have the date wrong, or they don't have the official photos. And really, those publications, they don't really care. They just want the likes and they want the news out there because they know people are asking them about it. But, you know, like I said, he's real on Twitter. So he was basically saying, you know, I'm not like these other people. I'm not like everyone else. That I'll be doing things my way and I'll release the shoes how I want. And so when he did get started on the release, you know, he had this great rollout with this commercial first. You know, and the commercial is great. And, you know, it shows that it's a shoe for the people because, you know, he's for the people. But the storytelling in the commercial really gives a hint at, I think, the stock number, since you can't really make a commercial like that and then drop 300 pairs. So the first release was this Chicago pop-up, and where people had lined up all day in the sun, or, you know, started lining up at night, and it really didn't look fun at all. And for some people who did line up all day, they didn't get the pair if they got there really late, because, you know, from what stories and videos said, that according to people there at the pop-up, security was paid off at the exit, so people were entering through the exit and then getting shoes that way. So it's tough when, you know, you're the man of the people and then this is what happens in a release. But, you know, Joe did put out an apology on Instagram, and a lot of that earlier brashness about, you know, I'm not like those other guys was gone. And it was replaced with like a sincere apology, and that he learned a lot for the next time. Ultimately, you release with the team and resources you have. No one thought to bring water for the event, because it just assumed people would bring their own water. Or, you know, just having three, instead of having three registers, you would have iPads and go up and down the line, stuff like that. But one thing I was finding interesting was, like, he said he wouldn't use that security again. But if you're in a big city, good luck trying to find security that's not paid off. The shoe itself, once people had it in hand, they were, you know, you got to see some better looks from real iPhone cameras instead of these carefully selected photos. And the shoe kind of looks like a Two-Face for me, you know, from Seinfeld. In some lighting, the shoe looks great. In other lightings, you know, the sole looks like it's melted chocolate, or worse, you know, turd brown. Maybe that's why the official photos weren't being released. You know, I'd love to see it in hand before buying, but that seems like an impossible ask these days. You know, if I had it in cart, I'd probably cop, but I don't think I'd pay $400, $500 resale for it. And, you know, like I said, if my guess is right, that if they did make a lot, like say the same amount as the Bottega shoes, then resale probably will be $400, $500, but I could be wrong. It could be limited. But there's no official online release. It's just a raffle. And from what I saw, it was just one for Illinois and one for the rest of the world. But that leads to the main topic I had for this podcast, which is raffles. So I want to talk about raffles, you know, particularly the Union 4s and the Travis Fragment drops that we recently had. And some of this stuff I have tweeted about here and there before, but, you know, consider the podcast the director's cut. You know, I want to talk about why everything is a raffle now, and also, you know, the raffle formula, as I call it here, of how the stores actually pick winners. And of course, we'll talk about raffle bots and the kind of the trolling that goes on. And, you know, I have some thoughts there as well. So why is everything a damn raffle now? Especially Union 4s. You know, Union had one of these Hall of Fame-worthy drops, one of the best anti-bot first-come-first drops ever. So why would they all of a sudden change to a raffle? It totally bummed all of us on Sneaker Twitter out, because by now we know how to cop on these types of drops. So people went from, you know, a pretty good chance of copping them to, you know, just not even knowing if you have a chance at all. You know, I saw lots of tweets and lots of posts upset about this, even, you know, emotionally gutted about this, because it's like that opportunity is taken away from them. And I think I even tweeted this, you know, I understand getting emotional about missing out on bread wands or something with history or nostalgia, but really this was like the second drop of a Jordan with a camping theme, which doesn't even make that much sense if you think about it. But, you know, Union and Jordan and the four, you combine them together and it's going to be something that people want. So I get it. So why the change though? You know, we know why Travis changed. Is because, you know, that kid on Instagram complained that he never had a chance. And really, I think it's probably the exact same thing with Chris Gibbs. You know, Chris has a great reputation. He probably heard people walking into the store giving him feedback that, you know, they were stuck in the queue, or they were still typing out their address and it sold out, or they saw the post 1 minute late. And, you know, for those of us who've sit in the queue, if you're 1 minute late, you're going to be in the queue for an extra 10 minutes maybe. So for all those people that were vocal, their odds of copping were almost always near zero. But with a raffle, it's non-zero. they have somewhat of a chance. So, you know, I've said this multiple times, but no one really listening wants to hear it, but it is the truth. We're bummed because we had the method of copying. We had a high chance. We don't care that the other people had zero chance. We care that we had a better chance. We don't care about fairness. You know, everyone just wants it easier for themselves. If you have this advantage, you don't want fairness across the board. You know, for those kids on IG, they have a better chance with a raffle than they did with a Shopify drop they've never tried on before. The rest of us, our response is going to be, fuck them kids. But if it's fairness we care about, the raffle is technically supposed to be fair. You know, even if RaffleBots got 20% of the stock or whatever, you know, we'll talk about RaffleBots soon. Those people still have a better chance at, you know, an 80% of stock on a raffle than they do getting into a Shopify queue 2 minutes late. Honestly, I doubt Union or Travis ever drop a hype shoe again, first come, first serve. It's probably, you know, once that toothpaste is out of the tube, it's going to stay like this. It usually doesn't go back. Travis never went back, and so if Union has another Jordan collab, I doubt it drops first come, first serve again. It's probably going to be a raffle. Maybe they'll fix some of the mistakes they made with this release. You know, some of the text messages stuff that they didn't get perfect, but most likely it'll probably be a raffle. You know, the real question is always, how are these stores, how is Union or the Travis team picking winners? You know, it's natural to think that it's going to be 100% random. But really, you know, we already know that they filter out entries where they get, because they get millions of them, as we saw with this Travis low. But there's a certain formula that they must have that we won't know. They could say 50% of stock goes to people with a purchase history and 50% goes to people with no purchase history. You don't want to always favor past customers and not ever get new customers. But, you know, sites like Travis always have these drop shipping drops anyway. So those are always, you know, chances for people to become new customers. This formula of deciding on who is the winner and who's not, you could get super detailed as much as you wanted to. You could require shipping addresses. You could look up the address on Google Maps to see if it's a real residential house, all that kind of stuff. You know, that might seem like I'm just making something up, but it's a script that anyone could write, that I could write. Now here's an example formula that a store could use. Say 50% of your stock goes to people with a purchase history of $1,000, and 25% goes to people with a purchase history over $200, and then 15% to people over $100, and then 10% to people who have no purchase history at all. If you just apply that formula to the 3 million entries that you get, you know, that dwindles the pool down quite a bit, I'm pretty sure. And I'm sure the biggest number is that 10% of people who have no purchase history at all. Because no one's going to have 30,000 email addresses that have previously placed orders. And really, some of the, you know, the catch-all email addresses that people use are, you know, frankly pathetic. If you put like XYZ resale shop on there, you know, those are easy to filter out. Just filter for the word sneaker and you'll probably filter out half of these junk email addresses. But we on the outside, just sitting, you know, refreshing our inbox, we just have to trust that these stores do have a formula and they are applying it and they are filtering out entries. And the thing is, do we believe them? Are they filtering out correctly or are they being lazy? Because everyone in the sneaker game has seen stores be lazy and just, you know, drop something easily and quickly. But as I said in past episodes, if the store has their own name on it, they're going to care a lot more. Union is going to care a lot more. Travis is going to care a lot more. Joe Fresh Goods is going to care a lot more. If the store is just raffling off this week's Yeezy, they're going to care a lot less. But of course, you know, this stuff is not impossible. It is still possible to bot this stuff. We saw it with the Union thing where people were selling invoices because it was easier to sell those than it was to check out, and how strict the checkout was on that stuff. And, you know, I saw some shady stuff there too, where people were selling invoices with no refunds and things like that. You know, especially when the odds of getting canceled were pretty high. And that's probably why we saw so many rounds of those raffle winners, because they were probably just canceling them and then restocking them and restocking with a new raffle round. But from what I saw, I'm pretty sure most pairs went to just regular people. But what when you see, you know, the Twitter timeline just being raffle invoice, and not, you know, no one, like I always say, no one flexes the cancels. So it's never, ever clear of who, how many of those people actually got canceled and how many didn't. Of course, I'm saying there were probably lots of people who got pairs through these kind of raffle bots, but my guess is still most went to regular people from what I saw. I saw more regular people with invoices than I saw flexed raffle pairs. And, you know, even with the Travis drop, there's the big thing where, you know, AYCD Jake and Zach, you know, had trolled some screenshots of 30,000 entries and 87 winners. And, you know, it went viral and it's all over the place. You got worked if you saw that. Everything is pro wrestling. That was a work. That was a troll. But the thing is, those guys are capable of getting pairs. They're no just lightweights. You know, I'm sure Jake or Zach did get pairs, but probably not 87 pairs. You know, by the time I got the shoe in hand and I posted photos, I had not seen anyone post any flex shots of the fragment highs. You know, where are the flex shots? You know, flexing is kind of important these days because it is a barometer of who hit, how many did they hit, because people can't keep quiet about this kind of stuff. You know, the flexes tell the story. For Union, I saw a few flex photos of Union, and most of those were the Desert Moss ones and not the Topaz one. If you look at size 12 Topaz Union 4 on StockX, there's probably like four listings. That's how rare that shoe is, so that's probably why you didn't see that many people flexing it. And like I said, for the Travis Fragment Highs, I didn't see anyone flexing them in hand with stacks of them. I saw more pairs of those being flexed from, you know, the New York Loopers like Upscale Crack and them the week before the drop. And, you know, those come from in-store than I did from the raffle botters. In all these cases, I saw way more flex shots of from Yeezy Day than I did these two drops. So in an Yeezy Day, the stock was higher, the success was higher. And that's what I want to get to here is the story being told. And what is the story of the drop? You know, when Union had the distinction of being able to say that no one was able to bot their site when they did those anti-bot releases, they can't really say that now because there's clear evidence that people were able to raffle bot their most recent release. But with raffles, there's never going to be transparency. You know, no one is going to be transparent on their stock numbers or the raffle formula or even how many entries they get. You know, the last one, the entries one, is the one where sometimes we find out, you know, on concepts raffles, it shows how many people have entered. And, you know, the Cactus Jack Discord said that they were filtering out 3 million entries. But overall, there's a good reason why no one can announce this kind of stuff, because you can't, you know, Nike says you can't announce stock anyways. And if you gave up what the formula is, then it could be abused. The retailer isn't going to say, you know, we got 2,000 pairs and we got 2 million entries and we're only going to give it to people who have bought $200 worth of stuff. With these previous drops that were, you know, first come, first serve and anti-bot and, you know, all that stuff, the story of the drop was told by the retailer. You know, the Amon Manier is one of the best releases of recent memory. And they worked really hard of it. And that is the kind of the story of the drop, that, you know, bots didn't work. It was super fair. There were multiple rounds of raffles in store, online, and a regular drop. Sure, some people didn't get through the queue, or if you were, you know, distracted and 3 minutes late, or, you know, the theme breaks and you can't check out, something happens, or you're just too slow. Those stories you still hear, but they're not exactly the story of the drop. But with raffles, the story of the drop is completely out of the retailer's hands. The story is told by the people who took the L, who didn't get the text, the people who want to flex or troll, or the people who want to snitch on people who want to flex and troll. These raffle bots and this trolling creates this fog of war, stuff is taken at its word and posted as if it's the truth. And it's promoted and pushed by even the sneaker publications who are hungry for the likes, as we talked about. And so it's out there and it's believed as true. A raffle could be 100% perfect and fair, and no one would ever know. You know, the secret theme of this podcast episode has been about fun. Are you having fun with sneakers? Are you entitled to these sneakers? You know, we know the answer is no, but really we want to say yes. I hit on all the good sneakers, so I got to get these again. I deserve these sneakers because I took the time to figure out how to, you know, buy it online. I put in the work. But is that fun? Is this entitlement fun? Is just about having it is the part that's fun? And yeah, I guess it is. You know, are you on Nike's hamster wheel chasing every decaying tooth dunk that's coming out, you know, hoping you get early access tomorrow? I joke that it's like, man, this shoe sucks, but I hope I get it. You know, what is the answer to this? The answer is to either stop buying the shit you don't need. If the thing you want is bringing you down, the answer is to not buy it. Or it's to extract fun from the things around you that you can control. And that's what I've been kind of talking about in this whole episode on Yeezy Day and all these exclusive access stuff. I know I'm not getting them, so I'd have my fun my own way. The part about actually having that shoe in my hand is taken away from me. So to replace that feeling, you know, you can go on Deadstock or something. Go open some random box and ask yourself, is this better than the Desert Moss Crisscross Union 4 camping shoe? We just had this whole year of buying. Maybe it's time for a year of purging. You can purge your identity too if you want to go that far. You know, the sneakers that you have, do they represent you? You know, I'm not saying go full Russ Bankston and purge everything. And, you know, the title of this episode isn't called The Slow Descent into Communism. That would be a good name for an episode though. But, you know, reevaluate things for yourself if the shit you buy right now is bringing you down, or the shit you actually can't buy. I talked briefly about all this on the State of the Sneaker Game podcast. So definitely check that out, but I felt I had to almost say it again and kind of restate it because it applies more than ever. You know, if you're listening to this and you're like, hey, Sockjig, you actually got those Travis Fragment shoes, so who gives a shit what you have to say? And, you know, that's fair, dog. But really, I have the shoes. They're going to go on a stack. I'm never going to probably wear them. They're more a collection piece now. You know, I really wish resale on a lot of shoes just stayed at 700, 800 max. It makes it way easier to undead stock and wear. When a shoe resells for $1,400, $2,000, you have to stop and actually think about it. I'm sure pure resellers are listening to this going, what the fuck are you saying? Every shoe should go for a ton. I'd make so much money. And, you know, that's the difference. I do resell shoes, but I really mostly collect. Like I've said before, if it's a good shoe, I've not sold it. I have them all. So all this stuff that I'm talking about here, when I say this, I don't mean it in a condescending way. I'm not really telling you what to do. I've already said I don't gatekeep. I'm just saying, think about it on your own terms. Stop buying the shit you don't need. You know, that sneaker buying country club I mentioned from the last podcast. Are they going to tell you to stop buying sneakers? Absolutely not. That's a buying club. It's not a take a break and pause your membership club. They're going to say bye, bye, bye. Even just take buying out of it. It's like, if this thing is making you jaded, how does it not do that? How does the opposite work? And, you know, my version of that is just extracting joy and fun out of the things around sneakers as well. And I don't have the answer of what that is for you, but I'm pretty sure you have an idea of what, you know, you enjoy doing. So do that shit instead. You know, I say it because I don't think anyone else is saying it, because, you know, the sneaker publications, they're more worried about the fog of war likes that they get than actually having the truth out there. Or, you know, trying to figure out as much truth as we possibly can. And that's basically what I do on this podcast. So that's why I very respectfully say to you, you know, stop buying shit you don't need. go spend it on vacations or concerts or, you know, cars or nice restaurant or whatever. You know, I talk like I'm saying this to you, the audience, but really I'm saying it to myself. This has been episode 21 of the Sock Jig Sneaker Podcast. Thank you for listening. I'll see you next time. Go fuck yourself.